numbers, but I think it is merely an indication that social factors other than the use of scarce maximum security prison space have a great impact on the number of traffic fatalities. And it seems to me we ought to be using the relatively limited funds that we have available for those kinds of solutions, which are more likely to be dramatically effective than for a symbolic gesture that really, in my judgment, doesn't do a great deal of good. The other thing to be said is that on the other side of the record, we're aware that our prison system is currently greatly overpopulated. While it currently has not been held to be unconstitutional, Judge Burns' opinion certainly indicates that we're close to the line in this state. And it seems to me that because there are alternative sanctions available that may be effective with respect to drunk drivers, that we ought really to be reserving our very scarce resource of prison space for the kind of offenders that for which that is the only alternative, violent rapists, violent armed robbers, and other things of that nature. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Questions, Steve? Thank you very much for your statement. I'm going to call out the names of the witnesses on other bills who are indicated to be from out of town. And if you cannot conveniently come back on Friday, would you please come up? We have 20 minutes. And there are one, two, three, four witnesses, as I see, or five from out of town still left. Let's see. Carol Satterfield?
I would like to be fair because there are other people who have traveled farther than I have today. I do wish to address the issues in 2809. I have written testimony available for your perusal. You've heard it.
Yes, she's on my list. I apologize for this problem. When we set this agenda, we did not realize we were going to be mandated to adjourn at 3:30. I expected to be working in the afternoon and get done. We're now at the point in the session where those things are happening after the committee set their agendas and send out notices. Do you wish to come back on Friday? Can you come back?
I won't be able to Friday afternoon.
So you would.
If you have time today,
I'll come. Okay. Well, let's. If you want to wait, all right.
Jack
Dowdy from Ashland.
They're going to be compressed.
Well, I'm sorry, Dr. Dowdy, you were already here. Excuse me. Yes, all right. Let's see. Right, Shelley Fennell. For the record, this is on 2974.
That which I'm handing out is not my written testimony. I don't have any particular written testimony. It's simply how I would like to see additions put on to 2974. My name is Shelley Fennell. I'm from Bend, Oregon. Presently, I serve as president of the Deschutes County chapter of MAD. Last November, I began the research and beginnings of our chapter. We were chartered as the fifth chapter of MAD here in Oregon. We now have seven. One of the things that was brought up to me as I was in my research part of the chapter formation was by a particular judge in town who said, the diversion program itself is a very good program. Unfortunately, it does not have any great incentive to stay on the program. The word had gotten around, apparently, that when a person goes on diversion for a certain period of time, if they come off of diversion and go back to the court system for that trial, many times there are extenuating circumstances where a person will not even finish the trial. A person can move away, the police are not there, the testimony is vague simply because it happened such a long time ago. What the judge mentioned to me then was a particular idea of possibly having a guilty plea entered into if a person did not complete the diversion program. What this does is an incentive for that person to complete it. If the diversion program is completed, then the status remains exactly the same as it is. But if a person does not complete the diversion program, they are simply sent back to the courts for sentencing. This would alleviate the vagueness that happens when a person is off of diversion and goes back to the court system. There are a presupposition on most of our parts that say when a person comes into a diversion agreement that they will keep it. Unfortunately, with the court monitoring that we do and with the access that we have to different records, we're finding that people are not completing the program. And so this is why I'm here, to recommend a possibility of adding this on. It would have to be added in ORS 484.450. Before you there, I have what would need to be added, and that is that as a condition of applying for diversion, the defendant waives his or her right to a trial and enters a plea of guilty. Also on ORS 484.470, subsection 3, it would be amended where it would say it shall require the defendant to appear in court, terminate the agreement, and proceed with sentencing. This is how I would recommend the changes be put. I took this to the judges in our district and also to the DA's office, and this was how they felt it would succeed most properly. That's all I have to say. I don't want to take any more time. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you for your proposal, and we will consider it in our work session. Are there questions at this time? Lieutenant Lamar.
Do you have any figures from your area as to what percentage of individuals do not complete the diversion program, or what percentage have not completed it to date?
No, I don't have any. I guess where I'm simply coming from is in discussing it with them, they are seeing a large number of them. Statistics are not simply available. By large numbers, I sat through court monitorings for the past 2 weeks and saw seven different cases myself of that particular item happening.
I mean, where the people had been on diversion and were being hauled back in to be tried.
This was in district and municipal court in Bend where this had happened. Now, as a percentage-wise, I can't give you a percentage statistic on it. I simply went in and checked that out. This is the sort of things that we did see.
Thank you very much. Barbara Stoffer. Let's see. Have I missed? Well, I think you're the last one. Let's see. Have I missed anyone who signed, who's here from out of town and could not come back? I tried to catch every name signed from out of town. Yeah. The problem is we have to adjourn at 3:30, and I was trying to get all the witnesses who were signed and could not come back on Friday, so we'll complete the hearing. Come on up, please. We'll take you down.
This right here is how you work well.
Sure, come on up.
My name is Carol Satterfield. I live in Beaverton. I am the state director of Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, and one of the bills before you today is House Bill 2809. Since its inception in 1981, Oregon MAD has stressed the importance of evaluation and alcohol treatment or education programs for all persons who plead guilty or who are found guilty of driving under the influence of intoxicants on a first conviction. Under current law, persons pleading guilty to a first offense of DUI can avoid evaluation of a potential alcohol problem, which may go undetected until a subsequent conviction. Evaluation of those persons pleading guilty to a first offense will enable judges to determine appropriate sentences. And because early intervention is essential to controlling the disease of alcoholism, evaluation serves the needs also of the offenders. Another issue raised in House Bill 2809 is that of community service as a viable alternative to jail terms. We recognize the critical lack of jail space in this state. However, we firmly believe that serving time is a strong deterrent to driving under the influence. Serving time need not be behind bars, and considering the budgetary problems of most counties, community service becomes not only a viable alternative, but also a fiscally sound alternative. You will reference Section 1, Paragraph 3 of the bill pertaining to DUI felonies, such as vehicular assault, murder, manslaughter, negligent homicide. I personally would recommend a minimum of 500 hours community service, which is the equivalent of 12 and one-half weeks based on a 40-hour work week. Drunk drivers who seriously injure or kill another person should not be pitied, coddled, or excused based on their intoxication as a mitigating circumstance. We are not willing to accept DUI injuries and deaths as socially acceptable, and we expect all persons convicted of DUI felony to be held fully responsible and accountable to the fullest extent of the law. 12 and a half weeks is minimal when you consider, for instance, that death is permanent. Felony DUI sentences are often nothing more than a slap on the wrist for the victims, and too often they are a slap in the face. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm Barbara Steffler from Lane County. I'm presently the president of the Lane County chapter of MAD. I'm also a member of the Governor's DUI Task Force. I'm speaking today without notes and without a formal statement for you because I just didn't have time to prepare it. But I wanted to speak to House Bill 2956. This is the first time I believe that it has been brought up in hearing. This bill was drafted in hopes of providing funds to supplement those parts of the problem that need to have supplemental budgets. It's a feeling of the task force, a very strong feeling of the task force, and also of Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, that we need to have comprehensive planning when we're looking at this problem. We need to impact it and to do it effectively. The comprehensive planning should include some funds in order to implement. It provides dedicated funds in this way, and we call it the 1 cent a drink tax, but it's not necessarily that. What we're looking at is a 1 cent on wholesale level at 12 ounces of beer or 4 ounces of wine or 1 ounce of distilled spirits. Now for a six pack of beer, that should increase it by 6 cents if it's a 12 ounce size. Logically, it should increase a bottle of wine around 8 cents, and a bottle of distilled spirits in a smaller size, I don't know what size you would call it, it would be 25 cents according to our computations. Now, just at that level of wholesale level taxing, the income derived from that could be up to $13.7 million, which I think could be all utilized just to try to do something about this problem in the state of Oregon. Now, I know that the rest of the people who are volunteers in Mothers Against Drunk Drivers probably spend the same amount of time on the phone as I do talking with victims and with people involved in this problem. I had a young man from the University of Oregon call me the other day, and he said, I really need some information because my brother was just killed by a drunk driver on Mother's Day. And so I tried to do the best I could, but there's so many victims out there that really don't come up here and can't come up here and talk to you about their problems. And we know it's there, and that's why we're taking our time to act as their voice. This would be, if this bill did indeed pass, the funds that would be gathered could be used in a system-wide approach, and it could be granted out as needed in a system-wide approach. And that could include education, prevention, and enforcement. And it should include all of those. I think that probably your goal is the same as ours, and that is to reduce deaths and injuries on the highways. And if we indeed have a passage of new laws, we should indeed also look to the funds that would help implement these laws. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions? We have 4 minutes. Is there anyone else from out of town who cannot come back and pray or does not wish to just leave a statement? Yes, sir. You have 4 minutes if you wish to come. Come on up.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, legislature, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Snetz from Lake Oswego. I'm here as a private citizen who's interested in helping do what I can to offer suggestions for consideration. A reference to a House Bill 2809, I think it's a good bill. I think it could be made more effective with the addition of the following sections, just as a way of example. For instance, add a Section 7, that the alcohol beverage industry doing business in the state of Oregon shall be assessed in proportion to their sales for the expense of restoring public property damaged or destroyed by alcohol-related incidents. And as a suggestion on Section 8, adding a Section 8, each alcohol beverage container shall carry a message, quote, the state of Oregon advises that consumption of alcohol may be dangerous to the individual and others to varying degrees. Serious loss of judgment may result from its use. Unexpected behavior may occur, end of quotation. And as suggested, Section 9, for example, the Mental Health Division shall make available and implement nutritional information to combat the effects of alcohol. And for far too long, it's my feeling, the alcohol beverage industry has been allowed to escape the terrible cost to the public of the effects of its products. It's high time this industry be held accountable as well as the consumer. The thing that, this has worked on cigarettes, this labeling, and I think it'll also work on alcohol. But the thing that has struck me most vividly about the insidious effects of alcohol is alcohol itself is a poison. It contributes to a disease. But beverage alcohol has a sedative. So this must explain in some part why people with keen intellects and good judgment begin drinking and get drunk. It affects everybody. It affects elected officials, it affects prestigious individuals, and so on. So I really feel that there is something very dangerous in the beverage alcohol that leads to this behavior no one likes to face himself the next morning, who previously the evening before had gone out just to have a good time, to relax, to be among friends and so on, and then be confronted the next morning with injuring somebody, a friend who may have tried to, in bravados, tried to swim across a lake or river and drowned, got in a fist fight, things that he never does when he's sober. And so, just one step beyond this, what brings this kind of behavior on is alcohol draws from the body system, the body mechanics, the body nutrition. It pulls out the vitamin B's and it pulls out the vitamin C's. If a person is going to drink one to last longer than somebody else, he would take a lot of vitamins, a lot of vitamin B beforehand. So it's so important that we recognize this other facet. Just take accidents, for example. Why is there so many fatal accidents, high-speed accidents at intersections? Alcohol affects the vision. You get tunnel vision. But people don't realize this so much. They're really out. They're not out to do this murder and mayhem and so on, but it sneaks up on them, and it's no respecter of status or wealth. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming down today. We appreciate your comments. I again extend apologies to all of you for the necessity of cutting the hearing shorter than we had planned, and I appreciate the courtesy of those of you who are able to come back and making way to those who can do so much less conveniently. We will resume hearing on these bills Friday afternoon at about 2:30. We have a work session of the full committee at 1:30, and then it's my intention to attempt, upon the completion of that hearing, to begin considering the bills as a subcommittee in work session. We are under increasing time constraints, so we want to try to reach a decision on our packages as quickly as we can. Again, thank you all for coming in. The subcommittee will, Linda?
I just wanted to distribute materials from the Health Division relating to these bills that the committee might want to look over before the next hearing.
All right.
Presuming they'll be back. They will be back in the fall.
Be back?
Yeah.
I'll be gone Friday. I believe this was either a considerable amount of statistics or might be beneficial to be in all these bills.
All right.
I'll just leave with you. We'll have someone here Friday in case you have any questions.
Yes, if you could, we'd appreciate it. Okay, the subcommittee is adjourned.